You're listening to This Naked Mind with Annie Griss.
Hi, this is Annie Griss, and welcome to This Naked Mind podcast. And I'm here with one of my favorite doctors, Dr. Melissa Cult. We have known each other now since 2017, and I have watched your work and just been so impressed with you. And you've just been an incredible resource and advocate for me and vice versa. And I'm just honored to have you on. So welcome. Thank you so much for being here.
Oh, thank you so much. I am totally honored. And it's hard to believe that it's been 7 years that we've, or 7 years ago that we met. That's amazing.
Yes. Well, why don't we start with, can you tell the audience like all about you? Like what is your background? What do you do? Who you are? All that sort of fun stuff.
Oh, absolutely. So I am a physician turned narcissistic abuse recovery specialist, first by necessity for my own life, and then by design. And I help high impact professionals, leaders, really transcend their past narcissistic abuse and rewrite their future. Essentially really making their past experience their superpower and accelerating their results moving forward.
Oh, I love that. And you have really deep knowledge about trauma. And can you talk a little bit about that experience and where that has come from, both professionally and maybe even personally?
Oh, absolutely. So, you know, I went through the typical medical school training and did all the stuff to get on the best doctors list in the nation and whatnot. And I kept noticing in my practice that there were things that we just couldn't really solve, you know, these women in their 40s who came in who were exhausted. And the doctor approach is kind of like check their thyroid and their vitamin D and make sure they're not anemic. And then it's kind of like, I don't know, sleep more. And that just wasn't good enough to me. They left dissatisfied. I left dissatisfied from those interactions because I really wanted to be able to help them. And then when I realized in my personal life that I was experiencing a lot of trauma, that my children were experiencing a lot of trauma, I decided that it was time to say absolutely enough. And I dove all in on figuring out and learning everything I could about trauma. And I started with traditional Western medicine because that's what I knew. And for emotional trauma, there's not a lot there. So I took it further and went really into Eastern and energetic medicine and got certified in other modalities. And what I've found is that it's this constant like layering on effect of layering on, you know, one thing that I knew, and now we layer on the next piece and the next piece and the next piece. And it's giving a more complete picture of what's really going on. And work with trauma is now, it's just one of my favorite things to do because the impacts are so profound.
Yeah, such a healing experience. So just very basics, like how would you define trauma?
Yeah, so emotional trauma, as opposed to like, you know, physical trauma, being in a car accident or some sort of injury, emotional trauma, very simply put, is not defined by what's happened, but it's the person's inability to cope with it in that moment and the story that they tell themselves about themselves as a result. Mm-hmm. So one of the examples I always like to use is, you know, say two people get in an identical car accident. They both have the same insurance coverage. They both walk away. Everything's essentially identical. One person will be sitting there saying, oh my gosh, I have the worst luck ever. I'm having the worst day, the worst week, the worst month, the worst year. Nothing ever goes my way. You know, I am completely unsafe and unsupported in this world. And they just have this very negative approach to it. Whereas the other person is like, oh my gosh, I must have had an angel on my shoulder. Isn't this amazing that I walked away from this accident without any injury? I've got insurance. I get a loaner. I'll have my car back in a few days. This is awesome. And so the incident itself is not defining as trauma. They both had the same thing happen. It has to do with their lens of the world and then the story that they've told themselves about themselves after. You know, one being I'm unsafe, and the other being I'm very blessed.
Mm. And what do you think creates that ability to interpret the same situation differently within a human being?
Yeah, so a lot of it is, you know, it starts in childhood and it's the experiences that we've had. We pick up some of the beliefs, the imprints of our parents, of our grandparents, our teachers, of society. Some of it is from previous experiences and the stories that we've told ourselves. And then what happens is it becomes a very self-fulfilling prophecy. So, for example, if someone has a very strong subconscious belief that they're unsafe, they will actually do things that attract unsafe situations to them, not in terms of like victim blaming, but it's just the way they show up in the world that these unsafe situations come in. Likewise, if someone has the belief that they're alone in the world, that no one helps them, they have to do everything themselves, they show up and behave in a way that reinforces that belief, that creates evidence for that belief. And these patterns go on over the entire lifetime until they're interrupted.
Oh, it's so powerful. I mean, I've had this experience in my own life, and I think with other people. And I think that one of the things that I think about is, on one hand, and I think this becomes a both and, where on one hand, we can overdo something like empathy, right? Because empathy is, we think we know. If you told me a very sad story, a very traumatic story about your experience, I'm not feeling your emotions. I'm feeling my interpretation through my perspective, my lenses of what I believe I would feel in your place. So on one hand, if I am telling myself that story, it affects my ability to even be present with you. I might be like, I can't talk to Dr. Call anymore because every time I do, I feel terrible. And so I can't be there for you. But on the other hand, there's this very real thing where our emotions and our experiences and our perspectives of the world, especially as they are put out from us emotionally, actually have like resonance, where limbic resonance, they have electromagnetic frequencies where we can for sure feel emotions and we can attract or repel certain things, certain types of people, in this way that science is just barely starting to catch up to. And so while kind of the traditional view of empathy, I'm going to feel your feelings, might be limiting, this fact that like what we put out and the energetic imprint that we have, it's really scientifically proven, because there are these things that create like a resonance. And, you know, it's incredible how the science, especially some of the more woo-woo science, is really catching up to the things that we've known for a long time. Because as a human being, I can be like, wow, when I was in this one stage of my life where I did feel like everything was against me, there was lots of things that appeared to be against me. When I shifted that internally, all of a sudden, things seem to be going better. If I think about some relationships in my life where I was for sure, this is the worst person, they're totally hate me, they're against me, I shifted internally, all of a sudden, that person looked differently. So it's just fascinating what you're saying, because I think there's so much science around that. And we need to hold both things at the same time, that some, no, we can't feel what someone else is feeling, but yes, what we put out into the world does come back to us in these ways we're just now scientifically being able to explain. And like you said, it's not about victim blaming. It's not about that. It's just about the scientific reality that when we carry and hold these perspectives of the world, we start to see things and they become true. So I love that.
Oh, absolutely. And our behavior, you know, is impacted by our feelings and our thoughts. And so for the person who feels really alone, and this used to be a big one of mine, feeling like I had the weight of the world on my shoulders and I had to do everything myself. And I never would ask for help. And even if people offered help, I would refuse, because I was caretaking them. I didn't want to inconvenience them. I didn't want them to have to go out of their way to help with something that I perceived as my responsibility. So of course I would feel like I had to do everything by myself, because my behavior of not asking, of not identifying my needs, and of refusing help when it was offered, created a lot of evidence that I had to do everything for myself.
Yeah, it becomes this reinforcing feedback loop. And what that does when we see it, even though at first you know, you might be listening to this and being like, no, everything is really against me. No, I am really alone. And I really honor those feelings because, like, both of us, we can relate to feeling those exact same ways. But what happens when you start to see, well, maybe I do have more control over my story that I'm telling myself about what happened to me. It is so powerful inside the human to realize, wow, not only if I shift my story, do I shift internally, but I can actually shift externally, like in real life, what's going on.
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the most profound things I remember, I think it was a therapist told me years ago, I was in this relationship that was horrible. And she wanted me to focus not on all of the horribleness or what the other person was doing, but just focus on the percent that was mine. And she was like, it doesn't matter if it's 3% or 1% or 0.1% of you that's the problem. 100% of your focus needs to be on that. And as soon as I was able to do that, it was amazing how things became so clear and I knew what I needed to do. And the external world shifted because I was able to take responsibility for my part, even if my part in the dynamic was a small percentage.
I love that. And I love this kind of principle of, you know, both things can be true, right? It can be not your fault. Absolutely not your fault, especially when we're talking about things that happened to us as children. And I even go so far as to say, if you're over drinking because of these traumatic experiences that you've had in your life, it is not your fault. Even the drinking is not your fault. You're doing the best you can with the tools you have. 100% not your fault. And it can at the same time be 100% your responsibility at this point in time to take ownership of your story and of your reactions and change your internal and therefore external experience.
And the really beautiful thing is that it works. So someone can choose to sit in the it's not my fault story. And it is just true. I mean, you're absolutely right. But if they want to change and rewrite that future, it's totally possible.
Absolutely. I love that. So how and when do you know as a human that trauma has affected me in a way that I should seek professional help? Like what are the indicators that I should, you know, be looking for help?
So that's a great question. And to be fair, everyone has experienced trauma to some degree. You know, I think studies put it at like 92% or something. I think it's really 100% of people. And we're not talking necessarily big T trauma, things like being in a war zone or a massive car accident or seeing someone murdered or that sort of thing. But the little T traumas happen all the time. They happen. I mean, you could have a near miss car accident on the way to work and it scared you and you felt unsafe for a moment and that traumatized your system. So the vast majority of people don't need to seek professional help for their trauma. Typically, what I would say the indicators are is if you are having trouble functioning, you know, if you're having significant disruption in your sleep, in your appetite, whether you're overeating a ton or not eating at all and losing weight, if you're not able to function, you're not getting up and going to work, you're not able to take care of your kids, you know, you come home from work and you go straight to bed and the kids fend for themselves, anything that's in the very extreme where you're just trying to survive and get through the day, having outside mental health support is going to be really, really important. And then beyond that, if you're functioning well, if you are stuck in the past where you're not able to move forward and you're stuck in the story, I see this all the time where people just want to tell their story. And being in the story is actually one of the slowest or the, it's a deterrent to healing trauma.
So to get clear on that point. So you're saying that going back into and being in that story, reliving that story is actually a deterrent to healing.
Correct.
Yeah. Cause coaching,
it slows it down.
Oh, that's so fascinating. Like with coaching, I, obviously have this Naked Mind Institute, which is training coaches to help people overcome habits and addictions. And as we know, one of the main things that people will turn to with, you know, trauma or experiences, it doesn't feel good inside, said very simply, doesn't feel good inside. So I want to escape inside. And alcohol is just a major thing in our society that people turn to. And so as they're coming, we notice that there's a lot of literature about people who are over drinking also have had traumatic experiences. And from what I understand about therapy is often that is to go right back into that experience and kind of relive it or explain it. And I always tell the coaches, you don't want to go back into that experience. You want to deal with the beliefs they have about themselves right now in the moment. And coaching is present, whereas therapy can tend to be past. And so I'd love for you to talk more about that and then continue on. This is fascinating.
Yeah, I think that's really true. And the thing is with trauma is getting stored in your physical body. It's getting stored in your energetic body, and it's stored in the subconscious mind. The conscious mind can't access it. It can't access it. So when someone is really badly off, they're really having trouble with just basic survival kind of things, like they've got no food in their fridge and they're just not going to eat today, and really having a rough time, or really diving into any number of addictions or dangerous behaviors, whether that's gambling or sexual addiction or anything as a result of trauma, they really need a mental health professional who's going to help get the mind part right first, get the mindset, you know, on track. But it can only take you about half of the way. The rest of it is the getting the trauma out of that subconscious mind, the body, the spirit. And there's no talk therapy or anything that's able to do that. That's where that actually takes you further away. So in the beginning, that's so hugely important. But you're right, with the coaching and whatnot, where you are in the present is what matters. It's not that the past doesn't matter at all, because the past has to some degree created your present, but it's equally true that your future creates your present. If you're thinking about who you want to be and how you need to show up today to be that, that's defining your present as well, and can actually rewrite your past.
So can you help heal trauma without like naming it or going into it as a coach, as somebody who's not a therapist?
Absolutely. So, I think one of the very best things to do is to be present with someone in their pain. And that's something that coaches really have the ability to do. They don't need to be trying to understand the past and, you know, create some big aha moment necessarily. Sometimes that happens on its own, but if they can be present and witness the pain that someone is still experiencing, or the fear or the anger, that is by far the most powerful. One of the ways that I like to think about this is, you know, say you were going to meet a friend for coffee and you are driving on the freeway and someone is drag racing their friend and they like swerve in front and they like miss your bumper by millimeters, and you get to Starbucks and you're just like completely flustered and shaking and whatever. Most of the time what happens is the friend is going to say, "Tell me what happened." And you're like telling the story. And then they're like, did you get the license plate number? How old were they? Was it a man or was it a woman? Did you honk your horn? Like, and you're telling the story, but what was really happening when you were in that car is there were four versions of you in that car: your mental self, your physical self, your spiritual self, your emotional self. Your emotional self is the one that's shown up completely terrified and scared, that feeling you get after a near miss where you're like, oh my gosh, I could have died. Your emotional self wants to be validated for being so shooken up. And instead, your mind is off telling the story. Yeah, I was blah, 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 driving and telling the story. And the emotional self is sitting there unvalidated. So, you know, if the supposed friend at Starbucks was like a coach, they just really need to sit there and be present with, wow, that had to be so scary. Oh my gosh, I can totally feel how scary that is. How can I best support you in that right now? Do you want me just to like sit here and hold it with you, or not trying to distract them and get them out of it, but just being present with the emotional trauma that happened without letting the mind, the mental self, derail the whole thing and invalidate that emotional being that you are by getting absorbed into the story and taking all the tension away from the part of you that's hurt and needs the attention and the healing.
Wow, this is so, so incredibly powerful, because let me put it in my own words. I recognized that really the obstacle is the way when it comes to healing emotion. Like, the most important thing that I have found for me, and you can confirm this or not, but in my experience, is being able to go into the emotion and sit with it. And especially the things that happened in my childhood, being able to sit with the part of me that's still 5 years old, that's still 4 years old, that's still 3 years old, as my adult self, and allow her. And I think it's one of like this is going to sound so cheesy, but it's one of the most profound and beautiful gifts of my entire life to be the person who sobs and the person who dries my own tears. Like, it is such a healing thing to be able to sit with myself and with a coach or with somebody who's present, holding space for me, or alone, or with my journal. Always have worked for me in various times of my life, and just allow the emotion. And we have demonized emotion to such a degree in our Western civilization that we make it wrong. We judge ourselves for it. We feel guilty about it. We are literally terrified of it. But purging these emotions, like, it makes a noise. It is intense. It's as if a little child was having a temper tantrum, and we're so afraid of that type of release of emotion that we tend to repress it. I mean, how many times have we said to our kids, don't cry, or we apologize as soon as we get even a little teary? Even if we're at a funeral, we apologize when we get like a little teary. And yet it's in that allowing the emotional self to have that processing, that releasing, that it no longer stores in the body. And so holding that space is so incredibly beautiful. And I guess my question would be, what's the danger? Because I think that's the biggest thing, is we're so afraid, like, oh, if they're really emotional, if they're really triggered, I need to get them to calm down. I need to get them to regulate. And in my experience, when I've seen, and I've seen many, many people just lose it, it doesn't last all that long when you let it go. But when you suppress it, then it keeps bubbling up and bubbling up. But if you let it go, I mean, maybe 7-8 minutes, maybe. And that's like max. Usually people just sob hard for 3 to 4 minutes. And it's like, and then it's like a little kid, how they feel after a temper tantrum. They're up and they're about, and you have this relief and this peace, because we just have never given ourselves permission to feel emotion. But as coaches or as people holding space for, we're like, but it's dangerous, but it's dangerous. So my question is, what is the danger?
Yeah. So there's a lot of people, there's no danger in emotions. There's no bad emotions. You're absolutely right. I mean, they've been demonized, especially sadness and anger. And especially for women, they're not supposed to have either of those emotions, and especially in the workplace. But in the safe space of a coaching appointment, there's not a great deal of danger. I mean, the biggest thing is the client themselves is going to have such a great fear of the emotion that they're going to be afraid that they'll never stop, that if they let some out, that they'll never stop. And so, and I was one of those. I had gone through a really rough period many years ago. I had had a miscarriage and then been getting pregnant. And then I was working in a pediatric cancer ward during my residency training. And we only got like one day off a month. I went to see Titanic at like 11 in the morning. And I started crying and I couldn't stop. And at like 11 o'clock at night, my then husband was like, you have to be at work at 6 in the morning. You need to stop this and go to sleep. And I'm like, but I can't, because I had like uncorked it. And so if you're someone who's held your emotions in for a really long time, I think that the coach can create a sense of safety. You know, like there's this whole big pile of emotion, like air in a balloon, and we're going to let a little bit out. And then we'll see what happens, you know, but we can always just kind of like take the remainder of that balloon and tie it in a tree for later to come back to the rest of that emotion. But let's just like let a little bit out, because you're absolutely right. Most of the time when people get past all of the fighting it and trying to not let it out, it is going to burn itself out really quickly.
So powerful. So changing gears a little bit, like what methods have you discovered to be best for healing trauma?
Yeah. So one of the ones that I think is most effective is to not think about the story at all. The story is, when I say largely irrelevant, I always get this flurry of people that are angry about that because their story is relevant. And I'm not dismissing how painful it is. But the story is not necessary to the healing process. And oftentimes the story is not even correct. We can have warped lenses from trauma for the way we've seen things. The other person can have warped lenses. I mean, the story is not what matters. What matters is the feeling. So in terms of healing trauma, if a coach or someone were to say to someone or working with yourself, like, wow, I feel really sad right now. And then naming it. And there used to be this big thing about saying like, I'm feeling sadness instead of I'm sad, because you didn't want to make it like part of your identity. And that I think is essentially nonsense, but it was a big thing for a long time. So just owning it. Wow, I'm really sad, or I'm really angry, or I feel so betrayed, or whatever it is. And then really getting into your physical body, because most of the time when people have trauma, because the trauma is stored in the physical and energetic body, they're way off over here in their head somewhere. And their body is like, they're just not even barely in the same room. So getting into your body, like, wow, where do I feel that? Oh gosh, I feel like this real heaviness in my chest. And it makes it even kind of like my breathing feels kind of wet. And where else do I feel it? Oh, it feels like there's like this weight behind my eyes, and really getting present with the sensation that you're feeling first. Then asking yourself, like, okay, what? And sometimes people can't access the emotion without noticing the sensation. What's the sensation you're feeling? Oh, I feel this heaviness in my chest, or my lungs feel wet, or I feel butterflies in my stomach, or my shoulders feel really tense, or whatever it is. Then dropping in and asking, okay, what's the emotion? The emotion, you know, being just a few: sadness, disappointment, anger, happiness, whatever. And then there's the feeling, which is our interpretation of that. Like, oh, I'm sad because someone died, or oh, I'm sad because I, you know, didn't get into the college that I wanted, or whatever that feeling is. But if you can really drop in to the sensation in the physical body and drop into the feeling, and then just breathing in and out of that area. If that heaviness is in your chest, breathe in and out of your chest. If your feet feel really nervous and wiggly, breathe in and out of your feet. If you've got a pain in the back of your shoulder blade, breathe in and out, picturing your breath going in and out of that shoulder blade will bring so much presence and so much attention to the area that it will allow it to release. That's because good. What it's wanting is to be seen and heard, just like we all want to be seen and heard. And we do a really terrible job of seeing and hearing ourselves.
I love that so much. It's always amazing to me when we talk how aligned our thinking is. I teach the same concept in a way that I call the three layers of emotion. and basically saying that we have the feeling in the body or the affect, the actual like physicality of the feeling, the chemistry, the biology, right? And those are feelings that we've had since the beginning of forever. Since we were babies, they were created so that we would cry when we needed something, and they can feel lonely, hungry, tired, you know, frustrated, all those feelings. And then that's the first layer of emotion, is that feeling. And then the second layer is that meaning, that story. And depending on the meaning you're giving the feeling, it can create a loop that either is like a reinforcing loop, you're going to feel that more, or it's a, you know, it's going to be able to change it. And that loop. So the story that I give, my friend Stacy, she is terrified of mountain lions. And our friend James saw a mountain lion in their hometown of Boise. And he was telling the story about seeing a mountain lion, and he, like, it was on his bucket list. So they both are going to see a lion and have a physical feeling, right? They're both going to have that affect, that physicality of the biology saying, hello, that thing has teeth and it could take your head off. But then they each had a different story. So Stacy's story was, I'm going to die. I can't ever go for a walk again in this town because it's not safe, right? And then that story creates more of the physicality, right? The fight or flight increases in her biology because of the story. Whereas with James, his story was like, this is the coolest shit. Like, I can't believe this is happening. This is amazing. And then that story actually calms down his biology because he's told himself a different story. And so while her biology is like spiking in terms of the physicality of it, his is calming down. And then the third layer of emotion that I add on that I think is fascinating, again, in our culture that we've been discussing, is judgment. Because we don't just keep there with the feeling and the meaning, right? We judge ourselves for those emotions, which then in turn create more meaning and more feeling. And so if we can like separate those three layers, we have so much more ability to just detangle from that emotion and see it for what really is, and work with the place we have the most control, which is the judgment and the meaning. We can't do anything about our physicality, right? So I love that.
No, that's really true. And the story about the mountain lion reminds me of one that I've heard about Bruce Springsteen, that when he would be ready to go on show, you know, on stage, when he felt super nervous and his hands were shaking and he felt like he was going to throw up, that's when he knew he was ready. Whereas a lot of people would say, that's a sign I should never do public speaking, or I should never sing in public, or whatever. There really is a lot to how you interpret the physical, you know, the physical sensations that you're experiencing. Yeah.
Oh, I love that so much. Like, I'm going to adopt that next time I'm like stepping onto a big stage that scares me. I'm going to be like, now I know I'm ready. Just like Bruce. So good. So, let me ask you, you know, on your website, you talk about extracting trauma. So what is extracting trauma, and what is your approach for this?
Yeah, that's a great question. So as part of my healing process, I reconnected with a lot of the intuition that I had. And, you know, we talked a little bit at the beginning about empathy. When you heal your own trauma and you get really clean, you no longer put yourself in the place of, well, this is how I would feel if my grandma died, or this is how I would feel if I saw that mountain lion, or whatever. You can instead actually feel what other people are feeling. And so this used to show up for me a lot in the doctor world, where, you know, I could just feel what was going on inside someone. Like, is this a chest pain we need to worry about? Or is this like when you get one of those little like muscle pinches or whatever? And as I cleared my own trauma, and I was really devoted to trying to figure out how to do this as quickly as possible for myself and my 5 kids. So I was highly motivated. But as I cleared it, I realized that in the same way that I can feel it in someone, I can, with their permission, if they're willing, energetically just pull it out. It's like drawing attention to it and then pulling it out. So, and this happens in person or by phone or Zoom or whatever. But I've had instances where, like, you know, one woman who is a doctor, she was getting ready to do this big workshop, and she called me and she wanted to talk through, like, get some trauma out of her knee because her knee was really bothering her and she wanted to be able to stand for her workshop. And so in a matter of a few minutes, we got the trauma out of her knee, but there's always the body is always a source of wisdom with the trauma stored in the body. The symptoms always mean something. And so I had said to her, oh, you know, your knee pain is fear of moving forward. So let's pull out that fear of moving forward. Then her knee got better. And a few days later, she had doubled enrollment in her workshop, which is just really cool. Or, you know, if I don't run around like connecting to the whole world, cause that would be way too overwhelming for me. Right. So if I'm working with someone and they were to ask, I could say, oh, wow. Like your fear of not being good enough. That's like really sitting here in your solar plexus. Are you ready to let that story go? Like, and just put that behind you. And if they're willing to do that, I can energetically just pull it out. It's otherwise hard to explain, but it's amazing because it just opens things up. People will have old fears stored in their sinuses that I can feel. And I can tell what it is. I had run into one guy once who was really not into this kind of thing at all. He was an options trader. And he said, oh yeah, well tell me then what's the matter with my ankle. My ankle's been bothering me forever. And I was like, oh, that's fear of losing your grandma. I didn't even know this guy. We had literally like just met. And he was like, you are kidding. My grandma raised me and her health is poor and whatever. I'm like, but I can feel it. And then I can just pull it back, pull it right out.
That's amazing. So I love to explore things that everything, like I'm just endlessly curious about everything. And I really think about, you know, my own teaching through a few different filters. Like, is there some science that I can point to, or has my own story confirmed this? Have I had a real in my own body experience that I could say, this is my story. You can experiment with your life and your story, because there's so much that scientifically we don't know and understand. And so much that we, because the human brain and the human body, the nervous system, and just our collective consciousness is the most advanced thing. It's more advanced than anything that's feeding back to us. So we're going to intuitively always be ahead of, I mean, Einstein agreed, Steve Jobs agreed. Like there's no one who has reached the edges of science who has not recognized that it is our intuition that is leading us even towards those scientific discoveries, right? And so I always have the filter of, can I point to a study if I haven't experienced it myself that is really statistically significant, or have I personally had a lived experience? And in what you're just saying, I worked with emotion code, body code healer for years energetically. And she was able to just like, you know, just exactly how you're saying, just go into a session with her carrying so much heaviness. We were working over Zoom. I don't know how that worked. My logical brain has no explanation, but my experience of it was that I would leave lighter. And even if we look at studies about things like placebo, right? Like even medicines that we're taking in a pill, if there's an authority and if there's someone who like our minds are so powerful in our own body, even suggestion in that way has me as a believer for those things, because that's how it works. And so I love that. I think that's just incredible. And I love that, you know, there's so many modalities and so much human intuition that gets discounted. So I teach something called affective liminal psychology, and it's the science of the system of self. And the first principle of the science of the system of self is that the operator does not know their own power. And I think that's just so true. Like we as human beings, we don't know, and we are waking up to the power that we have to heal ourselves and heal other people. And so everything you just said was
absolutely,
it's incredible.
Well, and it's so true. And one of the things that I find, you know, like when I was doing one-on-one work years ago, I had a deal with a number of my clients that they could just text me if they had something. And they'd just text me like I'd have a headache and then I'd take care of it. And I'd just text them back like literally 10 seconds later, how is it now? Oh yeah, it's gone. You know, or I have shingles, can you get rid of it? Or I have this or that, can you get rid of it? But what happened over time from doing the that was like bonus. So they didn't have to, you know, go into a big business meeting with a headache or whatever. But what happened over time was through our work together and through me connecting them to all of the different aspects of their self and them really developing a relationship where you have like your own inner circle that is feeding you all of this information, they became able to really do a lot of this for themselves. I have no goal for people to be reliant on me forever.
I love that. Yeah, that's so true. I say it, true medicine makes itself irrelevant, right? And that's what I hope for people who read This Naked Mind is that, you know, you read it and you're able really to not need to continuously go to meetings or to be in, and certainly there's some element of like wanting community and wanting to connect with people, and there's nothing wrong with that. But for me in my own journey, I did not want to be free from alcohol, but then tied to a different modality to escape or to feel sane in my life. And so I think there's so much, again, to take our power back. There's so much in that. So let me ask you, because you shared something with me earlier about, you know, rumination and how when we are, well, first, before we do that, let's do two things to kind of finish up this podcast, which is first, for somebody who is over drinking and who feels like there might be a real relationship with that in terms of their own kind of traumatic issues, you know, how would you recommend that they start to deal, like, should they make an effort to discover the trauma they have within themselves that they might not be aware of? Should it be done alone? Should it be done with someone else? If they learn they have trauma, should, like, what are next steps, and how should someone look into that for themselves?
I think the biggest and most powerful thing is for them to give themselves grace. You said before, you know, we're doing the best that we can with the tools that we have. And until now, they didn't have other tools. And taking out that judgment, that self-judgment of like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I was so stupid, or I can't believe I ruined my life, or I ruined my career, or I destroyed my marriage, or whatever the thought may be. I got my third DUI, well, you know, whatever it could be. There's no place for the self-judgment. The only place for any kind of discernment is this where I want to be? And what steps do I need to take to move forward, to change my external reality? There's absolutely zero benefit and a whole lot of harm in emotionally shaming and judging oneself. So stopping that first and foremost is huge. And then from there, figuring out, you know, sitting in this place of discernment, what is my next best step? And for some people, it may be going to meetings. For someone else, it might be going and working with a therapist and processing some childhood trauma and things that were in the way, that were altering the way that person was able to see the world. For someone else, it might be working with a coach who is going to have a very future focused, okay, here's where we are. The past is behind us. We can't do anything about that. But what choices do we want to make today to have, you know, 6 months from now, a year from now, 5 years from now, be on the trajectory that we want? And for other people, they may choose to do that alone. And I think that really letting go of any judgment around that, so many people are wrapped up in the shoulds. You know, I should do this. I should do that. I should go to that meeting, but I really don't want to. I guarantee you going to a meeting that you don't want to go to is not going to do you any good. Right? It's just not. Now, but if you can be discerning and say like, well, why do I not want to go? Well, because I don't want to be challenged. Well, that's maybe different. Or because I don't believe I deserve to have a better life. There's a lot of people that I work with in the narcissistic abuse world, the survivors, who feel like they deserve bad things or deserve almost as a punishment for being so stupid as to have gotten in the relationship in the first place. And it's not true, but it's there and it's real. So I think giving yourself grace for the past And then actively choosing and being aware and discerning about how to move forward in the future is huge, because everyone's path will be different.
Beautiful. So I guess I do have another question about that, which is there's all this talk about like re-traumatization and being afraid of re-traumatization. Can you explain what that is and what is the concern?
Are you talking about re-traumatization in like the coaching space?
Yeah. Like if someone goes to like, there's fear of, okay, so I'm someone who's over drinking. I want to get help with that. I also think I do have some trauma and I don't want to make it worse. And so, you know, I've been told to be very careful with who I speak to because of, I don't want to, you know, get re-traumatized.
Yeah. So I think the biggest thing there is, you know, as we were talking about before, when someone lets the mind go off on a story, or someone starts interjecting their own thoughts or their own advice or their own whatever, instead of just being present with what the traumatized person is experiencing, that causes additional trauma. So if you are sitting with me and you are crying and releasing this trauma, and I was like, Annie, you got to just get over it and move on. Like, you've got a family, you've got a business, let's go. That's going to be traumatizing, right? That's like a massive affront to who you are as you're sitting here in this very vulnerable position. And so often, if we have our own trauma, which everyone does, right? But if we haven't processed it ourselves or eliminated ourselves, we want to make things better for the other person. So it's not uncommon for someone to be sitting there and instead of letting you just cry, to be like, well, have you thought of this? Let me Google this name. Let me write down this phone number for you. Maybe you could call here and this will solve your problem. Or have you thought about this? Where it's almost more of a caretaking, not a supportive role, but it's more of a caretaking role. Like, I don't want you to be crying, so I'm trying to solve your problem quick for you so that you stop crying. And that's really disempowering, and that's re-traumatizing. So I think it's important for the person who's seeking help and for the people who are delivering help to be really aware, so that they're not re-traumatizing, because that does happen all the time. But probably not in the way people think.
And I think, you know, you had told me something in one of our previous conversations about how really that I need you to stop crying so I'm more comfortable as the person listening, or, you know, you just need to get over it. All of that is shaming, right? Mm-hmm. All of that has shame at its core. It's telling you that what your experience is of your emotion is wrong and is not welcome. And so if we just, you know, you said that really any danger of kind of re-traumatization comes from shame, and shame has lots of faces and it has lots of insidious ways to show up, but it's almost always couched in a, you should be different than you are. You know, you should be acting, responding, being different than you are. And even advice is cloaked in shame, because advice is me telling you what I think you should do based on my experience, which again is exactly what you're talking about. I don't know. I haven't lived your life. That's not my place, not as a therapist, not as a coach, to tell you what you should or shouldn't do. That I'm creating space for you to process and find yourself and your own wisdom and just to be present with you in it. And that's a very different experience.
Absolutely. And when you come at it from the standpoint of, I have full confidence in your ability to get through this and find your solutions, and I'm here to guide and support and witness and hold space, it's totally different than, you know, when all of a sudden you're giving advice like, well, could you do this? Or have you thought of that or whatever? You're immediately cutting the person off at the knees. They're already in the role, whether they're actually been victimized or not, they're in the role of victim and feeling disempowered when they're in that emotional state. And someone who's coaching or offering therapy or just a friend that's listening has the opportunity to empower them to shift out of that or to drive them further down that well of disempowerment.
Which it just strikes me that, interestingly, that's what friends and family do all the time.
All the time.
So we are unknowingly perhaps re-traumatizing ourselves all the time when we take our burdens and our pain to someone who, because they love us, they don't want to experience that pain. And so they just come in with this load of advice and how you should be fixing it. And then we're in this cycle. And maybe that's perhaps why a coach or a therapist or somebody external is so important, is because that is literally the definition of a relationship. It's, you're going to tell me and I'm going to tell you how you should behave because I don't feel comfortable with the emotion that you're bringing to me.
Oh, yeah. And even if it seems it's well-meaning, telling a joke or putting on their favorite movie, or, you know, you see the breakups on TV and they all go, you know, eat ice cream straight out of the container or, you know, whatever. That's all, again, saying it's not okay that you're sad. So we got to fix this. Or how can we fix this?
Yeah. Like classic, I'll just get you a bottle of wine. Let's just drown this. That was the go-to, you know, with all the moms groups, you know, your experience. Cause I think even like postpartum depression can be really traumatic. And it was just like, let's just drink it away. Let's just drink it away. So, you know, let's finish this segment with, I'd love for you to talk about rumination. And I know you have an incredible resource that I'd love for you to share with listeners because it's just so powerful. And your work, I find you so wise, and I love how you've encompassed Eastern and Western, and you're so open-minded and you use your own intuition and energy. And really, I always like to find people who I'd recommend to my audience who have fruit in their life, right? Who actually have, you know, demonstrated in their own life the healing. And that's so true for you. So can you talk about, share that resource?
Absolutely. So rumination, it's ubiquitous. The studies say 100% of people do it. We know that people who have experienced trauma and abuse tend to do it more. People who have addictions tend to do it more. Entrepreneurs tend to do it a ton, business owners. And rumination at its core is essentially perseverating on a thought or a question that feels like you have to answer it. It feels like I just have to solve this question, get an answer to this question to be able to move forward. But what it's doing is actually moving you further away from the answer and from the forward progress. And it becomes a habit where people will ruminate, you know, maybe before they're falling asleep at night, or every time they go to the bathroom, they sit there for 5 minutes and they're just having these very judgmental, shaming thoughts about themselves. Things like, you know, how could I have been so stupid to get into this relationship? How did I allow this to happen? How could I have stayed for so long? How could I have allowed my drinking to impact my job and my family's, you know, security? How could I, blah, blah, blah. But the whole implication is, how could I have been so stupid or so defective, or how am I so broken that I allowed this to happen? And so stopping that habit is key to moving forward in anything else, because if we're shaming and judging ourselves, and most people who either end up in abusive relationships as adults or end up with habits that they don't want, unwanted habits, things like drinking or, you know, smoking, drug use, online gaming, whatever, it's because they've already dealt with so much shame and judgment from someone else. And then they are just taking it on themselves. They may have like gotten that person or that situation out of their life. Then they're just going to shame and judge themselves. So I put together the whole process that I used to stop this habit. And I drip it out in a 10 minute email a day. The process, it takes like 10 minutes for 5 weeks. Because it is a habit. It's not something you can just binge. It's not like you're going to read a book and then be like, I'm done with that habit, right? Like, it's a practice that you have to integrate. And so that resource is available for everyone at ruminationbusters.com.
Well, that's incredible. Thank you so much for that. And I just highly recommend it. I think that as what we know about habits is how long it takes to break them. And you do need that daily practice. And that's why so many just reading books doesn't work. So actually to invest in something where you're investing time in yourself and you're committing to it, it's such a gift to yourself. So this has been incredible. Thank you so much for coming on, Dr. Call. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. This was awesome.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode. If you're ready to see how This Naked Mind can help you on your personal health and wellness journey and want to learn more, go to thisnakedmindpodcast.com to learn what your next best step is. Again, that's thisnakedmindpodcast.com. We have all of our free resources, programs, social links, and more available for you there. Plus, if you have your own naked life story to share, you can submit it there as well. Until next week, stay curious.